This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about after-school programs and how they've served communities across the state during the pandemic. If you have questions or comments for us today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, 866-476-3881 to join our live conversation with a recorded voicemail. We're joined by three guests. Sarah Beanblossom is the Director of Communications and Advocacy for Indiana After School Network. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for having us today.
Absolutely. Crystal Struben is the President and CEO of At Your School. Crystal, welcome.
Thanks. Appreciate being here.
And Ryan Wheeler is the Executive Director for Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour. Ryan, thanks for coming on this hour.
Matt, thanks for having us.
Sarah, let's rewind to times before the pandemic, which seems like an awful long time ago. What kinds of roles did before and after school programs play in their communities?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so we are an intermediary that represents the whole state. So after school is our world, and we exist to support after school. So we've spent the last 10 to 12 years working in Indiana and really helping to share the good news and support after-school programs across the state. So we know firsthand that a lot of great things have been happening in this space, and it's a really essential place for kids and families to get the supports that they need outside of the school day, whether that be making sure that they have the engagement in school and academic supports, making sure they're safe, also taking care of their social and emotional needs. A lot of time that caring adult and those relationships that come out of after school are really critical to ensuring the success of kids. And of course, we have all kinds of data to share about this if anybody wants any more information from the national and also here in Indiana at the state level. And then also, as you mentioned in your intro, after school supports working families in ways that are childcare, of course, in the physical setting of having kids in a safe place, and also beyond that academically. And right now we're seeing that those are super critical needs, because kids need somewhere to be while their parents are either working at home or if they're working outside of the home.
And of course, as you bring us into the present, I guess the next question would be, since the pandemic, have those roles in the community changed, or how has your execution changed, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. We're hearing a lot from around the state and also across the country. And so when the pandemic began, schools shut down, but after school did not shut down. As you'll hear from the great providers on the call, there was a lot of great innovation happening and a lot of things happening within the out of school time field of the providers really rising to the moment. And as we move forward and we see a light at the end of the tunnel, these innovations really need to stick around. Programs were doing things like distributing food to kids and families. They were also doing virtual programming that I think they can speak to a lot better than I can, since they were firsthand on that. And then also in-person care. Some programs were still open, serving essential workers if they weren't able to physically, be away from their kids. And then also as an addition to some of the virtual programming that was happening. So we saw a lot of great connections to families, programs just checking in to make sure that kids and families were okay and connecting them to the resources that they needed. And so much collaboration with schools and community groups and private and public funding. And of course, as we move forward, we really are advocating for even more of that, because we know that as school has reopened, it's also brought to light even more of a need for that collaboration between schools and more of a need for folks to have places to have their kids be safe and learning.
Well, and speaking of safety, I want to come back to you on some of the safety protocols that you've had to implement, of course. But Crystal, I want to bring you into the conversation. Can you tell us what At Your School does?
Sure. So AYS stands for At Your School. We are celebrating our 40th anniversary actually this month. So we've been in existence since 1980. And what we do is we partner with schools across Central Indiana to provide on-site before and after school and out of school time programming at the school level. So we offer a convenient opportunity for families and kids to get that academic support and the social emotional learning support, as well as that essential childcare when school is not in session.
What was it like when schools started talking about closing? Did you think it could be possible at that point to continue your programs in some way?
Well, I think like all of us who work with young people and work in the education space or youth development space, there were so many unknowns then when the pandemic hit. And so I think we were all starting to prepare for what the opportunities or the what the situation would look like. But I think when schools closed down really across the state by around, I believe it was March 13th, at least in this area, that was a big change for everybody. And I think something we couldn't have anticipated. And so we had to really react pretty quickly and try to figure out, you know, what is the need for students at this time and families? And then how do we meet that need?
And then how did you?
It's a good question. So for us at AYS, and I know we're not alone, there were many providers across the state that did similar things. We immediately transitioned and pivoted to pop-up care sites. So within a couple weeks or a matter of days, we were up and running with essential programming for essential workers. And so we were able to secure locations with school partners that were in in school buildings that didn't normally serve children. And so, or in some cases partnered with a school building. But in any case, we immediately opened up a pop-up care site and we were able to partner with the city and some other providers. And there were many other folks involved, especially in Marion County. The YMCA was a big partner in Early Learning Indiana, but we essentially set up these care sites so that essential workers would have care. And then as the community started to open back up, we transitioned and added more families to that mix. And then from there, it turned into moving into summer enrichment and then moving into pop-up e-learning locations. So there was a big transition from March to where we are today, just to meet that scope of changing needs for families.
And I mean, none of us were ready for this when it came along. But I guess how would you say that you were ready or prepared to make that transition at the time? Obviously, you've adapted since then. But I mean, how much of a scramble was it to build up these pop-up learning and care sites?
Well, I think that's one of the things about youth development is you really have to be ready for anything. And so were we ready? Did we have it all on paper at the moment? No, but were we able to transition quickly and get ready? Yes. And I think it was a heavy lift for sure. And there were lots of community conversations and lots of work groups that got us there. But I think being able to rely on CDC and health department guidance and really being able to transition, here's what our program normally looks like. And now here's what it needs to look like to meet these needs. That was the big demand and what we were able to do. I think as we moved on and had were able to look at kind of see down the road and know, wow, you know, we're in summer enrichment time. We're still not able to get back into school buildings. When will that happen? That took a lot more planning and we had a little bit more time to do that. I think for AYS and some other providers too, being able to understand that not all schools were going to go back at the same time once school started and to be able to really start to think through what's e-learning going to look like and how do we best support that. That was kind of the evolution that we followed.
Ryan, let's talk about Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour. Can you explain what you do there?
Yeah, we're an after-school program that serves all kids in Seymour, but actually we just expanded into Jennings County to serve in school-based sites there. Seymour is a site-based program. We have our own facility, but our focus is on academic success, healthy lifestyles, and good character and citizenship.
Did your programs close as well when this all started?
We did not. We have never shut down. I think part of the process was we have the superintendent of the schools on our board of directors. And so everybody was fluid, but we kind of thought, okay, the 2 weeks after spring break, And we'll be back at it. And boy, were we naive. But since we decided to stay open those 2 weeks, it was almost like we couldn't shut down, because we knew at that time, Boys and Girls Clubs have well over 4,000 sites nationwide. And at that time, there was only 88 clubs in the country operating and only four in the state of Indiana. And so we were here, families depended on us, and we just didn't think that we could close because we had so many people needing our services.
So then how did we were going to get the safety protocols. Let's do that now. I mean, how did that evolve as time went on? And I mean, how did it look at the beginning versus how it looks now?
It almost felt like your policies and procedures were written dry erase markers so you could change them as CDC guidelines change. But we again, we're very lucky in a small community to have the hospital and the health department readily available. And so honestly, I think the hardest part was not keeping up with that and changing it, but it was really for the staff. I mean, I think that the staff were kind of getting whiplash of those changes and just really, if you know a youth worker in your community, just thank them, because imagine coming into work today and it's like, okay, what policies changed today? What do we have to change in the next hour? And they were troopers. And those are the people on the front lines who are not the highest paid folks in the organization, but they were the true rock stars of all of this.
And not to mention, I mean, if everything is changing, did they feel safe? And I'm sure that you've kind of gotten an idea of what safety protocols you need to have in place now. I don't know what when you look at a typical day and a typical group that you serve, what does it look like? Are people staying away from each other? Is everyone wearing masks? Is there anything else that, I don't know, we wouldn't typically be thinking of?
Well, it evolved because at the very beginning, everybody thought it was temporary, so we were backlogged and thought we were going to have to hire folks. We were looking at other service providers in town at hiring their staff and bringing them in and training them to our ways and making sure that we knew what was going on. But as things shut down, there was a lot of people not working, and so we focused on those who were. And you have folks who are working service industry jobs at the grocery stores and hospitals and just home health care providers that were unavailable, so or couldn't stay home. And so we stayed open to them. And our numbers ebbed and flowed, but it constantly changed. We started in the small pods, and social distancing was a very foreign concept to kids.
Ryan, we'll have to leave it at that for now. We'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about after-school programs during the pandemic. And we will return to the conversation in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're talking today about after-school services in Indiana during the pandemic. And we would love for you to jump in. Your questions and comments can be shared with us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or you can leave a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. And you can download our new app called All In Vox Pop, which lets you send a voice message to us that we can play during the show. Just search for All In Vox Pop wherever you get apps. It's free and it's very, very easy to use. All In Vox Pop wherever you get apps. We are back with three guests, Sarah Bean Blossom, Director of Communications and Advocacy for Indiana After School Network. Crystal Struben is the President and CEO of At Your School. Ryan Wheeler is the Executive Director for Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour. So, Sarah Bean Blossom, I'm going to come back to you. What particular work does Indiana After School Network do with programs around Indiana?
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for asking that. We're an intermediary, so we don't run any programs, but we work with all the folks on the call, and we work with all different sizes and shapes of after-school programs across the state, whether they're in a school, they're associated with school, maybe they're a Boys and Girls Club, an AYS, a YMCA, or faith-based as well. So we are seeing right now, and as we have consistently, all of the different needs that come from after-school programs. So we work with our small staff to make sure that after-school programs have the quality tools that they need so that they can improve their programs. So we have quality standards that cover overall after school and then also several specialty areas like STEM, college readiness, healthy eating, physical activity, all the ways that after school influences the lives of kids. So we work with them to help them understand how to assess the quality of their program and then give them a plethora of tools, whether it be our online academy or our conference or working with other organizations, whether they be nationally or locally, to create the tools that folks need. So for example, right now, during the pandemic, we've been working with partnerships across the country to build curriculum tools that can be used in an either virtual, hybrid, or in-person setting so that when programs are able to serve kids, that they can have some make and take easy access materials that they can use with their kids. And beyond quality, we also are very active in advocacy and around the access to after school for kids and families. We know that before the pandemic, only about 11% of kids in Indiana were involved in after school programs because there just wasn't a space for them. For every one child that's in after school in Indiana, three were waiting to get in. Now that is before pandemic, so you can only imagine how those numbers have changed. So as an advocate, one thing that we do every day is listen to the program. So we have our folks out and about listening one-on-one, hosting forums, conversations with any number of groups of people from around the state to find out what their needs are and where they are right now and how we can develop resources for them, how we can advocate for them at the state level, at the federal level, and help them understand what connections might be available in their community so that they can continue to leverage the great work that they're doing. So really, we try and be everywhere and all things to all after school. We love youth workers. I loved hearing what Ryan was saying. We are cheerleaders for youth workers. We know that they have been on the front lines during this time, and they've been doing some very difficult work. And so along with taking care of the social, emotional of the kids every day, we also need to think about the people that are working with our kids and making sure that they have the supports that they need.
And so you, as an intermediary, you're kind of facilitating a degree, I guess, of collaboration. Why do you think collaboration between these groups is very important right now?
Oh, well, absolutely. Right now, it's essential. When schools reopened, we really saw that need for that collaboration. Crystal was talking about e-learning. There's some really great examples that have been happening across the state, and we need those to happen even more. So it could be that there is an after-school program that has the capacity to serve kids. They have relationships maybe with the same kids, and they may need a location that they can serve the children in that's larger than their traditional space, or maybe they were already in the school and they were not able to be there because of the COVID restrictions. But there's so many partnerships that build strong after-school programs. It's about financial, of course, but it's also about how people like, you know, Crystal and Ryan are leveraging their local business owners, their local educators, their parent groups as well, to help advocate for the kids to implement the programming and make sure that all those dots are connected so kids can be strong and resilient.
Crystal Struben, what concerns did you hear from the staff when the after-school programs closed?
Well, for us, our programs, again, are based in school buildings. So that meant every program, we were in approximately 44 school buildings when the pandemic hit. And so every one of those programs closed. And then we reopened in just two locations and then gradually reopened to school year. So typically around June, we'll close down most of our sites and just open around 10 sites for summer. So it just looked very different from us. We went from employing at 44 sites to going down to two and then growing back to maybe three during the summer, which is just very different. So I think for lots of different things from staff would have been, you know, just that loss of stable income and knowing what was going to happen next for them was the first phase. And then for those who came back to work immediately, just safety protocols and making sure that they felt that they would be safe and knew how to best care for students in this situation. And then, you know, I think those are the main things as we move forward. But I echo what Ryan said, as we've, you know, pivoted for every moment of this pandemic, you know, things change so much. So even when staff are working, you know, policies and procedures must change and shift based on what's happening. So I think there's just a lot of uncertainty and a lot that goes into helping staff feel safe personally, but also helping them manage through all of this change, which is great on everyone, you know, in the community.
Ryan Wheeler, I'm curious, did your programs receive any backlash for staying open when everything from schools to restaurants were all closing?
We did have a little bit, I think. We had some a couple letters from OSHA, which to us seemed completely unfounded, just because some of the allegations, just if you were in the building, were just not true, saying we were over certain numbers and a lot of those different things. And I think that might have just came out of fear at the very beginning. But other than that, I think the community was very happy, because we did. I mean, we were doing the best we could, trying to stay up to date as best as we could with guidance and mandates and what was a recommendation versus what was a requirement. And some people think a recommendation was a requirement. And so we just did our best to educate people. But I think when it really boils down to it, the kids and families and stakeholders that we were serving directly were very grateful, because like Crystal said, some of them didn't know where their next paycheck was coming from, didn't know where their next meal was coming from, didn't know if they were going to be able to make rent. And so we had to look at it through multiple lenses and not just COVID.
We're talking today about Indiana after school programs and how they've served communities across the state during the pandemic. Ryan, have you had any cases of COVID-19 in your program?
We've not. We've not had any cases in either our Jennings County locations or in Seymour.
Sarah, can you expand on the value that there is for working families to have after school programs a little bit?
Absolutely. So I'm armed with all kinds of facts and figures. So I'll start that answer with also pre-COVID data that it's known that working families, because they did not have reliable childcare, can miss up to 8 days a week a year. Or I'm sorry, 8 days a year. But that equals $300 billion in productivity nationally that's lost. So you can just see that effect in terms of our economy. And you can only imagine how that has grown now that parents are searching for somewhere for their kids to be. So it's an economic issue in terms of families and the workforce, but it's also an issue in terms of building our workforce as well. So kids are learning those skills, as Crystal and Ryan can speak to greatly, of cooperation, of team building, problem solving, and also working on their academics and building the relationships that they need with members of the community and partners in the community who are mentoring them. So it's building the whole child, and it's also supporting an obvious need for childcare, but more than babysitting. We like to really emphasize that when we talk about after school and out of school time and summer learning, that it's more than just a place for a kid to go. It's a place where they're really building their resiliency and really building on the next steps that they'll be seeing as they embark on adulthood.
Crystal, can you tell us how the number of active programs has changed since the start of the pandemic?
Sure. So I'll just kind of talk about where we are today. So typically in a school year, again, we're usually in 45 locations within the Central Indiana area. Right now, by the end of this month, we should have close to 39 sites back up and running. But they look very different than they did before. So the attendance numbers are much lower. And again, normally when school starts, just on the first day of school, we would be at the total number of sites. And with the gradual increase with school coming back in session, we have really had to pace those start dates out based on when schools came back in person. So we were operating closer to 22 sites up until now. We had 3 e-learning sites and then 18 school-based sites. And then our last 2 districts opened this next week. So it's just been a very different start to the school year.
So I guess with limited sites, I would feel like attendance would be higher since there are fewer sites. And I guess why attendance numbers have been low. But is there something that my assumption might miss? Why has attendance been so low?
Well, there's a couple nuances to happen. So not everyone is going back to school. Some families are choosing virtual learning. I think there still is a hesitancy from some families. Even if their child's going back to school, they might still be hesitant to send their child back to before and after school setting. So that, I think that's impacting the numbers. But generally speaking, school enrollment is down for in-person learning. So then that makes before and after down. For us, some of our sites just weren't able to reopen. So, and that was based on either the school was not going back into session or that they didn't have large enough attendance to warrant a before and after school on-site program at this time. So there's a few different nuances going on, but I think mainly the attendance for in-person learning is lower than it was previously. And so that does have an impact on after school.
I mean, how have at your school programs been able to adapt to those students having virtual learning?
So that's been very interesting. I think that was an area where we were able to really pivot quickly. We had an idea earlier in the pandemic that this would be a need that would be there. We started to plan the program model out from it, and then it happened very quickly. So one of our major school districts decided very quickly to turn into virtual learning. And so we worked with them and opened up a site in conjunction with their start date. And it worked out very well. We were serving probably about 100 kids a day in that program. And we aligned enrichment day to the school day. And we basically, split kids up by classroom and help them with their virtual learning during that period. And then if they had independent time, we were able to structure our after school and independent work around that. So we just helped kind of build that bridge for families who were still working and their students were not going to be returning to the classroom.
So Ryan, we heard from Crystal on attendance. I mean, what is your attendance looking like at Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour?
Our Seymour unit is a little, I'd say it's about 80-90% of where we were this time last year. But with the addition of Jennings County Schools, we're above total where we were as an organization because we did add 4 new sites in Jennings County school-based sites. So overall, we are up, but our singular sites, we believe, are a little bit lower.
And so once things return to normal, and we're a long way from that, with the addition of Jennings County, do you foresee yourself having to hire more staff? Do you foresee an influx after things return?
Yeah, I mean, in our region, we are seeing unemployment return to pretty low levels, and so hiring is tough right now. A lot of college kids that are doing virtual learning as well through college, it makes them sometimes unavailable when they were. But really, even in the height of things in March and April, our staff hours increased because during the school year, we're normally open 4 hours a day. But with extended hours, we were open 11 hours a day. So we really put in a full school year from March to June just based upon hours. And so our staff were working multiple hours, so they had more hours on the clock than they normally do. And so not only are they dealing with the pivot of what's going on, they're dealing with other extended hours. But we'll see. I think we've seen some parents who have said, you know what, with all this craziness, I'm just going to stay home with my kids. I want to spend more time with them. And we found a way to make it work during these tough times. And so we're going to find a way to have a single working household. We're going to buckle down and we're going to find a way to make that work.
We've got about a minute left, Ryan. Since you brought up staff, what are your program staff doing to care for their own mental and emotional well-being right now?
we try to just have fun where we can. I mean, one thing that we did that I think was most well received was just like a junk food party for all the staff after we closed. We had pizza and pop and chicken wings and tacos, and the staff could really just unwind and just dig in and have a good time.
Pizza and tacos or junk food. Those are staples in my house. We will be back sorry, what was that, Ryan?
Oh, just laughing because healthy lifestyles, I'm not sure those would qualify.
We do okay. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with leaders of three after-school organizations, and we would love your input. Your questions and comments are welcome today for our guests. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881 to comment on after-school programs since the pandemic started. And of course, you can also join us on All in Vox Pop by downloading the All in Vox Pop app wherever you get apps. Don't worry, it's free and it is easy to use. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in less than 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on after-school programs and services during the COVID-19 pandemic. We would love your input. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. And again, today we have Sarah Beanblossom, Director of Communications and Advocacy for Indiana After School Network, Ryan Wheeler, Executive Director for Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour, and Crystal Struben, President and CEO of At Your School. So, Sarah, I'll start with you. One thing we haven't directly hit on this hour is money, which I imagine is one of the most difficult aspects of running an after-school program, funding. What has funding looked like for programs in the past, and how does it look now in the pandemic?
Well, Matt, so looking back, and this is a common issue with nonprofits, but when we have surveyed programs, funding is always the number one issue of finding that funding that can carry them forward and be sustainable. We do have some great sources within Indiana 21st Century Community Learning Centers that comes from the federal level and through our Indiana department that funds several sites across our state, and about $20 million a year, which is a wonderful contribution to low-income communities and serving them. But we also know that that's not nearly enough to serve the need. And so over the course of this pandemic, we have seen some funding that's come through FSSA, that's come specifically to childcare organizations that are serving kind of birth to age 12. And so there's some overlap there, but it's also for licensed programs, which a lot of the programs that are serving kids in this space and after school are unlicensed. So one of the projects that we work on within the network is to help educate and advocate around these dollars. And we really want to encourage the flexibilities in the funding and in the policies while making sure that we're ensuring safety for all children, because we do know that programs need this funding to survive. A lot of their funding uncertainties are around, you know, maybe new restrictions that make programming more cost prohibitive. Maybe they need some more physical space in order to provide their programs, and also just staffing. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we could pay these tremendous staffers, you know, a much larger wage would be ideal at the end of that. And also, just going back to some of my facts and figures from the national level, this August, we received information from the After School Alliance based on a national survey, and 89% of programs across the country are concerned about their long-term funding, and 64% are concerned that they may have to permanently close. So when you look at the landscape of after-school providers, there are well-supported ones and with lots of infrastructure who may be able to apply for some of the short-term loans and the programs that have been coming out of the federal government. But those will only last so long. And then there are also smaller programs that may not have the savvy and the ability to do that kind of legwork to work with banks and make sure that they can stay open. And then also there's always the uncertainty of state level funding. We struggle from year to year to make sure that after school is an important issue and that it's not overlooked in terms of the space that the out of school time field plays between simply childcare and in school learning. So always advocating programs like this, which we thank you for, are really essential in helping to get the story out of the great work that people are doing in our communities, and also to encourage parents to reach out and share the value that they see when they have the opportunity to have their children be in these safe and enriching opportunities.
I mean, it sounds like there's always, I mean, as is the case with so many nonprofits, the fight for money is always a strong one. How much of a fight do you have to put up with year over year to get these state dollars, these federal dollars?
Well, and also I'd like to just interject that there has been a lot of CARES dollars that has come into some of the child care sector. And of course, we were anxiously anticipating, you know, $57 billion for childcare and maybe $175 billion for education that may have been able to be flexible to be used in this space. But we now know that that package has been put off for a little while. But there are initiatives at the national level and the federal level that do trickle down to our state. And how are we able to leverage the use of those in opportunities like a setting that, you know, Crystal Orion is organizing in a safe and meaningful way for kids and families?
Crystal, some schools have been reopened for 2 months now. What about the process of reopening after school programs? What about that has been challenging amid all the safety protocols and everything else?
Right. Well, I think the high point that's come out of this is that it's strengthened relationships between providers like us and school districts, because we've really had to work together to make sure we're in sync as we reopen, and that after school is thought of as a comprehensive part of reentry. So I think that's been a really good part of this reopening process. I would say from a barrier perspective, certainly like thinking through all of the different safety precautions to line up specifically with each school district. So AUIS, for instance, based our safety precautions on CDC and health department guidelines. And then we have to make sure within each district that we sync up and have strong communication. I think the moving target of positivity rates was probably the biggest barrier, because trying to figure out what school would open at what time based on the state's guidelines, that was probably the hardest thing, because it varied so much across the state.
Mm. Sarah, do you feel like after school programs were undervalued before the pandemic?
I would say absolutely. I think that after school has really risen to the challenge. And we talk about this on a national level with leaders across the country that, you know, now is really our moment to, unfortunately, you know, because of the situations that this is where it becomes our moment. But there's so many connections that are being made that we hear about every day. And how do we continue to build on these lessons learned and build on these innovations and these partnerships that Crystal is talking about and really propel this space forward? Because the fact is that after we're, you know, out of some of these more challenging spaces, kids are going to be very challenged in their academic progress and in their social, just their care in general and their emotional states. We hear over and over that is one of the most important needs that programs have right now, is how they can have more support for that within their programs for kids and families. And that will only continue to grow as this pandemic goes on. And so how can we help get kids back to a space where they are moving forward in a similar trajectory than they were before? And all that time outside the school day and supporting families is going to be more essential than ever.
But do you fear, I mean, the number you brought up earlier was 64% of these programs are concerned about closing because of funding needs and other factors related to the pandemic. Do you feel that, unfortunately, it may take some of these programs closing down in order to get the attention that might be necessary to revive after-school programs as a whole post-pandemic?
Well, I think if there is a gap like that in some communities, then ideally that will inspire a stronger sense of advocacy within the communities to show, now look where this hole is and look that what our kids do not have anymore. But we would like to think that it would never get to that place. And so we as a network, we're trying very hard to gather information and distribute it, whether it be from programs and finding out what their needs are and distributing that, you know, on up the chain to someone who can help with decision making or distributing in that in their community and vice versa, because things are happening at a national and a state level very quickly. And so how can we help organizations embrace the opportunities that are coming along and how do we help them become more equipped? That's really our charge, is to help with that professional development and that networking for programs. So that's what we've been doing in 2020, and we're very excited to continue to do that, to make sure that the programs as well are strong and resilient.
Ryan Wheeler, do you share any of the concerns that some of the other after-school programs have about funding there at Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour?
Well, we actually, as you know, nonprofits talk about money quite a bit. It's part of the board meetings and board packets, and for a couple of years, we have planned to try to make some changes on our income and really see different ways to bring in income. So while we're not really concerned too much about the here and now, it is what things are going to look like in the future. We're blessed to have an incredible board who the finance committee through all this was meeting weekly. The executive committee was meeting biweekly. We were going out and looking at a lot of different things. And luckily, we were able to grow through this into Jennings County. Ideally, Jennings County would have looked bigger and different, but we had to change and make sure that we could serve those kids still at a basic level. But I do think what you'll find is those strong nonprofits will be there because they're fiscally responsible. They plan for the rainy days and they look for things that they know it's going to happen. And we were planning for a rough 2020 due to some other funding issues from partners, but we didn't realize how hard it was going to rain in 2020, but we were prepared for the rainy day.
Crystal, what did 2020 look like going into 2020 for you as well? Did you share some of the same concerns?
So we operate on a fiscal year. So our fiscal year ended in June and we were developing a new budget to roll into. So, you know, developing a budget during a global pandemic is really an interesting proposition. So I would kind of echo what Ryan was saying. I mean, I think that, you know, nonprofits have to look at the big picture and be prepared for changing circumstances. But for us, I know we've really relied on our donors during this time to ensure that we're there to provide the services needed. Running programs at any time, high quality programs, is an expensive proposition. And we try to keep our rates low for families and our costs low, but it's not always easy to do. And so I think being able to rely on donors and rely on other funding is really critical for us. So
I would say, Crystal, that in my experience in talking to nonprofits, that they're always exceedingly optimistic. And so when you look at, and that's a good thing, that can be a very good thing for interacting with donors and also interacting with the communities that they serve. What are you optimistic about in this, in what so many people would paint as a dark time?
Well, about the work that we're doing. I mean, it's interesting that you said that. One of my staff sent me a note from one of the students in their program, and it was very eloquent. I'll just read it to you. But essentially just said, the connections that form as our staff nurture positive adult-child relationships are hard to quantify and certainly don't receive the headlines, but it is really the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow in out-of-school time programming. Through these positive relationships and closing academic gaps and social emotional learning, This is what makes the biggest difference. And I think the fact that our parents and students see that value, I think that is a positive. The fact that we can be there for kids and families and that we're keeping those individuals safe during this time. I mean, that's I would say the pot of gold that we can focus on.
So, Sarah, the mission is always top of mind when you're thinking about this. And then it sounds to me like thoughts of money. I mean, while they've always got to be there, they absolutely come second, if even they come that close.
Yeah, I think really from our perspective, if you're looking at for a positive in all of this, we're really hoping that all of this work and all of these wonderful stories like Crystal has just shared are really part of building a more robust and equitable system for after school and making sure that the kids at the end of the day and the families are the ones that are able to have these safe and healthy places to be. And if I might just add one more fact as we get ready to close out, I wanted to share that this is also certainly an equity issue. And what we're finding from the numbers as well is that programs that serve low-income youth are much more likely to be physically closed than those that serve high-income youth. So, so when we look across the scope of after school, there are multiple different buckets where these families and these opportunities are falling in. And so we need to make sure that we're serving all youth and making sure that those that are also the most at risk are able to have these opportunities.
Ryan, any follow up on word about equity when we look at say your organization, since you're close to it?
Well, our organization and Boys and Girls Clubs have been around for 160 years, starting in Hartford, Connecticut in 1860. We've always in our mission those who need us the most, and the most can mean economic issues, it can mean social emotional issues, it could mean educational issues. We always try to fill the gaps. And I think that's one thing that makes Boys and Girls Clubs really special is that we try to seek out the needs of the kids and families and tailor our programs to that. We have the core principles of what we are, and those have been around forever. But back to the optimistic things you said, kids are resilient. Kids are great. I mean, they to see the smiles on their faces when they come in the door, you can start to see smiles through masks somehow. You can see them through people's eyes and whatnot. But you can see those. And just some kids, home's not the safest place to be. And so when you see the relief of them getting off the school bus and getting a healthy snack and seeing one of their favorite staff people, it's great to know that we can provide those things to them.
Ryan, in our last 30 seconds, what does the rest of this fall look like for the Boys and Girls Clubs?
Well, we hope what it's looked like the last 2 months, but we're ready for anything.
I want to thank our guests for taking the time today. And good answer, by the way. Sarah Beanblossom, the Director of Communications and Advocacy for Indiana After School Network. Sarah, thank you so much for your time and your work.
Thank you. And thanks for highlighting this issue. It's a really great program.
Crystal Struben is the president and CEO of At Your School. Crystal, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, too, Matt. I really appreciate being included.
Ryan Wheeler is the executive director for Boys and Girls Clubs of Seymour. Ryan, best of luck.
Thank you. And thank you to Micah for all her work in setting this up as well.
Our producers are Micah Yason and Drew Dodlin. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, of course, is the Friday Pitch-In. We'll catch up with the biggest stories of the week out of Indiana at the top of the show. In the meantime, we're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.